In the gritty backdrop of Victorian Glasgow, a story unfolds that blurs the boundaries between life and death, science and ethics, freedom and control. Poor Things introduces us to Bella Baxter, a woman with an extraordinary origin story. She was once a pregnant suicide victim whose body was salvaged by the brilliant but physically monstrous surgeon Godwin Baxter, who transplanted her unborn child's brain into her skull. This fantastical premise sets the stage for what becomes not just a gothic reimagining, but a profound meditation on identity, autonomy, and the stories we tell ourselves about who we are. The novel's genius lies in its refusal to provide easy answers, instead offering competing narratives that force us to question what we believe and why. What if the most fantastical explanation is actually the truth? What if our rational explanations merely mask deeper mysteries about human existence? Godwin Baxter presents a striking contrast, physically deformed with an ogre-like body, but an infant-like face. Raised in his father's laboratory mansion, his education focused exclusively on mathematics, anatomy, and chemistry, while literature and religion were dismissed as unprovable blethers. This left him technically brilliant, but emotionally stunted. His home reflects his mind, filled with scientific instruments and specimens. Bella initially speaks with childlike wonder in careful Northern English. She approaches everything with uninhibited enthusiasm, from piano to social interactions. Her intellectual development forms the novel's backbone as she progresses from simple sentences to sophisticated philosophical discourse in mere months. Her character fascinates through the tension between her adult body and infant mind, experiencing the world with childlike curiosity. Their relationship blends tenderness with troubling elements. Baxter creates in Bella not just a scientific achievement, but a companion who accepts him completely, taking him for granted as much as the floor under her. Unlike Frankenstein, Baxter nurtures his creation, attempting to heal his isolated upbringing through her care. This raises questions: is this love or possession? Is he her savior or her jailer? Bella's journey toward autonomy begins with her impulsive elopement with lawyer Duncan Wedderburn, her first assertion of independence from her creator. Their European travels become an education, as Wedderburn's initial passion transforms into resentment, exposing Bella to both the pleasures and disappointments of conventional romance. Approaching the world without social conditioning about female behavior, Bella treats physical pleasure with the same intellectual curiosity she brings to all experiences. When her companion expresses shock at her casual attitude toward intimacy, she responds candidly about her experiences all over the world, directly contradicting Victorian attitudes represented by Dr. Prickett's claim that no normal, healthy woman wants to enjoy sexual contact except as a duty. Bella's true transformation occurs in Alexandria, where witnessing starving beggars being whipped for wealthy tourist entertainment awakens her political consciousness. This trauma evolves her from pleasure-seeking somnambulist to a woman with moral purpose. Upon returning to Glasgow, she has developed both intellectually and morally, embracing compassionate socialism focused on practical improvements to human welfare. As Bella travels beyond Glasgow, the novel expands from Victorian sexual politics to British imperialism. Through Harry Astley, empire is defended with cynical clarity. He describes free trade as Britain's ability to buy as cheap as possible and sell as dear as possible anywhere with the help of our army and navy, comparing it to carving up famine-stricken countries like a carpenter cuts wood. The novel's most powerful indictment of colonialism occurs in Alexandria, where Bella tries to help a blind girl with a baby, only to be forcibly restrained while others insist she could do no good. This experience transforms Bella, leading her to reject both religious justifications for imperialism and cynical acceptance of exploitation. General Blessington embodies imperial violence, celebrated in Victorian literature as a lean, skyward-pointing pine tree of a man. His military career built the empire through force. The novel strips away this heroic facade to reveal a disturbed man who abused his wife, abandoned his pregnant mistress, and ultimately takes his own life when exposed, showing how societies mythologize violence that serves imperial ambitions. Just as we've accepted Bella's creation story, the novel delivers its most radical element, Victoria McCandless's explosive letter denouncing her husband's narrative as morbid Victorian fantasy. According to Victoria, there was no brain transplant. She was simply a young woman who fled an abusive husband, suffered amnesia from a head injury, and was nursed back to health by the compassionate Godwin Baxter. Victoria systematically dismantles her husband's account, identifying passages plagiarized from Gothic works like Frankenstein and Jekyll and Hyde. She attributes his narrative to psychological issues, envy of Godwin's famous father, resentment of her privileged background, and jealousy of her genuine bond with Godwin. This competing narrative forces us to reconsider everything. Was Bella truly a surgical marvel with a transplanted infant brain, or just a traumatized woman recovering from abuse? Was Godwin a brilliant but morally compromised scientist, or a humanitarian doctor who sheltered a vulnerable woman? The novel deliberately provides no definitive answer, challenging us to examine our biases about gender, power, and truth-telling. Bella's body becomes a central site of contested meaning. To Baxter, it represents his greatest achievement and potential victory over death. To Wedderburn, it's an object of desire. To General Blessington, it's property to be reclaimed. To Dr. Prickett, it's a pathological entity requiring correction to eliminate abnormal sexual desire. The climactic confrontation between Bella and Blessington hinges on competing claims to her physical form. When Blessington insists she is his wife Victoria, Baxter reveals crucial evidence. Her body lacks Victoria's appendix scar. This transforms Gothic horror into feminist triumph. Bella's new body literally frees her from her abusive past and the man who claimed ownership of her. The absent scar symbolizes her rebirth and independence. Women's bodies often become battlegrounds for competing ideologies, from reproductive rights to beauty standards. Poor Things suggests true personhood emerges not from the body we're given, but from how we choose to inhabit it. Bella's journey demonstrates how physical transformation can lead to personal liberation. Poor Things meditates on narrative reliability and historical truth through competing voices that each claim authenticity while undermining others. The novel's structure honors Victorian conventions while subverting them through nested narratives, letters, medical records, newspaper clippings, and conflicting biographical accounts. By refusing to privilege any single perspective, the novel suggests truth is inherently multiple, contradictory, and culturally shaped. These competing narratives challenge our assumptions about reliability and evidence, transforming Poor Things from Victorian pastiche into a sophisticated exploration of how societies construct knowledge through narrative. In our post-truth era of competing narratives across media platforms, Poor Things feels remarkably prescient. It reminds us that truth has always been contested territory, that official narratives often mask complexity, and that sometimes the most fantastic explanation might be the most honest. Perhaps freedom lies not in knowing absolute truth, but in recognizing all stories, even our own, are partial, perspective-bound, and open to revision.